We need to continue to remind each other that we still need to continue to focus on that high quality product. Correct. Because that's what keeps the pull through demand going. Beef, meat across the world or across the board. I mean, we could, whatever species you want, people want to eat meat right now, but beef especially.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Give your cattle platinum protection with Virbac Bovagen Platinum Vaccines. Start your protection at us.virbac.com/platinum protection. Data shows most cattle don't get enough vitamin D, which can impact health and performance. High D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status. Be proactive with Cattle Active. Visit proearthanimalhealth.com today. Lallemand Animal Nutrition offers microbial solutions to boost animal welfare and performance.
Hello. So today we've got Dr. Phil Bass from University of Idaho. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on the Beef Podcast. Talk about some meat science. And so a little out of my wheelhouse, but it should be a good conversation.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So Phil, I guess give me a background of what you do today and how'd you get there?
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, so I grew up in the rural North Coast, California, part of California most folks don't know about, and that's okay. It's a dairy and beef cattle country, and grew up cutting meat with my family. My family were not, they're not butchers, they're just carpenters, but you know, they figured if you can cut wood, you can cut meat, I guess. And so so we did that just more as a pastime and for filling freezers and things like that, but we raised our own cattle. And so anyway, I did my undergrad and master's work at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, California, Central Coast, moved out to Colorado State for my PhD, looking at beef quality and animals that don't quite fit the ideal for carcasses, ended up after graduating from there, working for the Certified Angus Beef brand out in Ohio, did a variety of things. Started out actually on the international side, traveling coast to coast in Canada and talking about quality beef there. But then moved more into a traditional meat scientist role. Did a lot of cutting fabrication, troubleshooting for packers and distributors and things like that. But my home is in the West, and so it was time after about 8.5 years. My family and I to pick up and move back to the West, and we landed in Idaho, in northern Idaho, and I really appreciate it because I love this area. I love the support that agriculture gets from the university side, and then also vice versa that the university gets from agriculture. So it's a really great connection there. We are a very beef and cattle heavy state, and I appreciate that. And so my day to day is it's very different every day, but I do a lot of what I used to do at Certified Angus Beef. I do cutting demonstrations. I do a little bit more research now. Our research spends more time on very applied subjects. I want to be able to pick up what we've researched and drop it right into a packing house or drop it right into a restaurant. You know, I want them to be able to take what we're doing and use it immediately. And that keeps me very engaged in the industry in many ways. And so that's kind of my short background here. Where we are today.
Yeah. So you've got a really broad background of the diversity of where you've lived, those operations, because it's totally different from East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah.
And so, especially from the end consumer end of that, is totally different of, you know, desires, needs, wants, etc. And so, so I'm sure that really has shaped a lot of your philosophy and how you look at meat science.
You know, I encourage everyone, especially my students, because they're still very malleable. But I encourage everyone to get out there and experience the world. You know, especially cattle producers, we have to get out there and see how things are done elsewhere. Right. If not to learn different techniques, but just to better understand what the rest of the world is doing and to truly appreciate what we have here. You know, every day we wake up as farmers and ranchers and gripe a little bit about this and that and the other, but we still have a pretty great opportunity to raise livestock, raise cattle, graze out here in the West. But you're right, you know, out in the East, especially in Ohio, where we were, it's corn and soy country. Mm-hmm. And to see cattle just out grazing was a bit of a rarity. And it has a lot to do with the history of the U.S. and the migration of folks west and the smaller population or the smaller acreage that you're dealing with. But, you know, when my wife and I, we moved out there, I'm not a corn farmer, but we got a few acres. I know how to build a fence, though. And I really took advantage of the lush feed that grows out there, native, and we were able to background a few animals as a result. And so anyway, long story short, travel as much as you're able to experience different areas, different lifestyles, different cultures.
Yeah, I think that's a tremendous point. And, you know, I agree on the being a Western United States person. And, you know, I've lived East Coast to West Coast from New Mexico to Montana, and those experiences really shape my philosophy of how I think. Mm. Really challenge you. Yeah. And students and people that like to stay in certain areas, I think they limit some of their thoughts of, and they just get in set into the traditional thought processes or dogmas that do not necessarily help increase our ability to adapt, move forward, and change.
Yeah, well, and as an academic, that's our job is to continually broaden our horizons, broaden our minds, and any chance I get, especially to travel internationally, I do, and I've been very fortunate as a result. But I take those experiences, I bring them back. It helps to build on our story that we tell to our students and our stakeholders. I have an extension position, and so I'm often relaying ideas that I've found in different parts of the country, but then also different parts of the world that helps to build perspective.
So let's move into the topic on hand of the future of meat science. And so, you know, we've talked about this broad background that you have and all these experiences. What do you see the future of meat science is moving into?
First thing that most people, if you weren't in our little world, the meat science world, outside, if you ask somebody that question, they'd think, "Oh, it's all gonna be plant based and lab grown meat." And I throw the BS flag up on that one. You know, there are absolute limitations, and this is a social limitation. This is gonna be society is going to dictate where we go with things, and I strongly believe that the overwhelming voice right now is that they want food to be from original food sources. And so we definitely have a market for those different areas, but I think it's very limited, and I think it will continue to be. People appreciate what we do. We have to somewhat ignore a little bit of the noise that's out there and keep working for the folks who keep the lights on. And that's right. The overwhelming majority of our of society out there. The folks go into the grocery store that have a budget, you know, that want something to taste good, be good for them, but hits a price point that's good. And so, you know, folks can play around in the niche area all they want, but in the end, people still like meat and potatoes. All right, so I'll get off my soapbox now. Let me get back to your original question. Future meat science looks very promising. I'm a board member of the American Meat Science Association. I'm grateful to be a part of that family. I'm a little bit unique in that I didn't take exactly the same approaches as many of the others that were out there through meat judging and things like that. But I look at the meat sciences as this cool blend of art and science. And I think there's a great resurgence of interest in that area right now. Meat science continues to make improvements on the food safety side of things. And we absolutely need to focus on that. But efficiencies are absolutely critical as well. If we take it back to the beef side of things, cattle continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's the message to the producer, and rightly so. That's okay. It's our job as meat scientists to figure out what to do with those bigger and bigger cattle and how to make sure that they are still a good value for the end user, that they're still of high quality, but then that they're also still a good value for the producer to make those animals. You know, when I was in graduate school, I did some research, and when we were doing that research, I was looking for especially large cattle. And I was really excited when we found like an 850-pound carcass. Okay. Well, this year we haven't had an average steer carcass less than 900 pounds.
Yep.
Average. And right. So cattle are big. And that's where we're focusing a lot right now, is trying to figure out how do we optimize these bigger animals and make it so it's still a great eating experience for the end user, that it's consistent, that we're using that, you know, 10,000-year-old piece of technology called a knife in the most effective way. And so that's kind of where we're going. We continue to focus on quality and getting that message out there. The beef checkoff. So National Cattlemen's Beef Association has been one of the big leads on that. They have done an amazing job over the past several decades, getting the beef industry messaging that says that quality is good, quality pays, mm-hmm. And we need to keep waving that banner. And my worry right now is that it's become just such a normal thing for everybody that we might forget that that's our target. And so we need to continue to remind each other that we still need to continue to focus on that high quality product. Correct. Because that's what keeps the pull through demand going. Beef, meat across the world or across the board. I mean, we could, whatever species you want, people want to eat meat right now, but beef especially. And I think it's really interesting just how, if you go to the grocery store, I don't go to the grocery store very often. We have our own cattle, and so we have our freezer beef. But if you do go to the grocery store, check out the prices. It is crazy, the cost of beef at a grocery store.
Right.
But who dictates those prices? It's the consumer that sets the price, essentially. And so the demand is there. We as cattle producers should feel confident and happy and content with where we have come. But we need to continue to focus on quality. And so future of meat science, and especially in the beef side of things, is to continue to focus on quality, and especially trying to figure out how do we continue to better merchandise these bigger carcasses that we're getting.
Yeah, you touched on two topics that I was going to hit on. So thanks for that. One was the carcass size. And you're right, is we've seen this trend of growing, increasing carcasses, and you know, there has not been a signal to quit. Mm-hmm. And so that is a challenge from the standpoint of eating size.
Yeah.
You know, think about these large ribeyes, and so that's a challenge for people, of especially if they want to go buy a ribeye and it's just too big.
Yeah.
Right. And so what are we doing in terms of, you know, cuttability or cutting that can help with some of those issues of some of these steaks are way too big for a lot of people. And so we need to change some of that, even if carcass size are increasing.
Yes. So, and that's a great question. That's something that I've been working on for a very long time. I love using a knife and just trying to find a better way of cutting a carcass. What we're finding, and we figured this out a few decades ago, kind of crazy to even say that, but around 2005 is when a major change happened in the beef fabrication side of things and the packing side, where we started cutting carcasses in more of a European style. So it wasn't hunk and chunk like we'd been doing for a long time in this country. It was much more nuanced and more precise. And this is when items like the flat iron started to show up. And so we reevaluated the way that we were cutting beef, and we continued to use that idea, that foundation that was set, and go forward. And so to your point, you know, ribeyes continue to get big. The actual muscle that makes up the ribeye, the longissimus dorsi muscle, it becomes the strip loin as you go towards the back of the rear of the animal. And that's one that we can absolutely take if it's a really, really big muscle, and we can cut it in half and make a smaller portion size item, but then also allow for greater thickness. The ribeye steak itself, I don't think we found the top end of what people are willing to pay quite yet. And so I don't know if we're, I mean, we have experimented with taking that apart, taking the different muscles right. apart. It makes a great eating experience. It's just that when people think of ribeye, they have something in mind and we can't quite deviate from that as much as we would like to. We definitely have folks that are willing to, but it's almost like a, it's like a religion. If you're a ribeye kind of person, we can't change that one as much. But many of the other muscles we're able to cut in a different style, break them down smaller so that we can make a smaller portion that's more ideal and allow for more thickness of those steaks. And that's kind of where we're hanging out right now.
So how do you see, because we're seeing this trend or this increase in producers selling, you know, sides full beef, you know, mm-hmm. and so you see a lot of consumers really like that. And back to your comment of they want to know where it's raised.
Yeah.
And so it's naturally raised, et cetera. And so how do you see your side of meat science and the future of meat science through some of these other non-traditional ways of marketing beef?
I do the best I can as being a part of the extension service at a land-grant university. I serve big and small producers and processors. And I think it's been an interesting learning experience for the beef industry, this more direct-to-consumer marketing mm-hmm. that we're finding. Some folks jumped into it headfirst tried to completely change their business model and go direct, completely to the direct-to-consumer marketing. I think a lot of learning happened at that time where some folks realize, well, there's a reason why we have a system in place that we're not all direct-to-consumer marketing. I have found a handful of folks who really grasped the idea of diversifying. It's like any financial planning. Diversify your portfolio. Okay, right. So find some direct-to-consumer marketing opportunities that are out there. And you will absolutely make more money per pound on that animal that you raised. Okay. You're also going to spend a lot more time marketing, managing logistics, managing the different cuts. And so my job right now is to just help those folks look at the cut sheet that their little processor gives them and say, well, we can do this, 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 and this, and that's going to lower your ground beef amounts. That's going to improve your number of steaks and roasts that you're selling. It's going to make better steaks for your customers. I mean, there's some small packers out there that are still making steaks that we cut in the 1950s that are just, you'll never see at a grocery store. And so we need to kind of figure out ways that it's going to make it easier for the consumer to relate to that final product. Right. That's the direct to marketing side. But what I really encourage listeners out there to do is don't give up on the traditional commercial side too, and have a broad portfolio. And that's the ones that I've seen have great success. They do a little bit of consumer direct to marketing stuff and they're slowly building that part of their business, but they also still have their main herd that's still going through the commercial outlet. And guys, cattle prices are great right now. And so it doesn't make sense to go completely to direct to marketing for a lot of guys.
No. And I think, you know, COVID really changed a lot of that for a lot of producers, is that we saw a big increase in producers moving into the direct to consumer market. And some of them did great. Some of them failed. And it was their ability actually to feed cattle and know how to feed cattle from that end for the consumer. But there's also the headache of getting them into lockers.
Yeah.
And so that was a big challenge, is the locker space and actually get them slaughtered. It caused a lot of issues.
Yeah. And that has greatly been alleviated more recently. But during that time, you know, the whole world didn't know what was going on, and especially the beef processing side of things. I would tell you that, you know, if you want to do direct to consumer marketing right now, locker plants have a lot more availability than they did 2020, 2021, even 2022, and in fact might be willing to make some deals right now. And so there's great profitability to be made on that side of things. Just remember that it's not just about slaughtering an animal and cutting it into chunks. It is the marketing side. You have to build a brand. Right. And just because it moves and has four legs doesn't mean it's always good beef, right? So like you said, if we're finishing these things, we got to do it right. You have to have consistency in your product. if you have just some random snaggletooth old cow that, that goes into your brand and your face is on that brand, people are going to remember that.
Correct.
You have to target something that is of high quality that people want and will pull through.
It's the quickest way to know what your genetics are truly like.
Yeah. Yeah. You see the result right there, huh?
You see the result very quickly. Where in a traditional model, it may take years before someone's catching on that your animals may not be performing up to standards.
That's very true.
Yeah. Right. And so that feedback comes back sooner or later. But in that model, it comes back very quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's interesting you bring that up, because I don't want to forget that our, the guys that are out there much larger and maybe don't have the time to direct to market, that this idea still plays. You know, you're building a brand of cattle.
Yep.
That's going to go to a feeder, or that's going to go all the way to the packer. And you need to be building your brand that you raise high quality animals that are, that are pre-programmed, that have their vaccinations, that we know their genetics. We're picking the right sire. We're building our cow herd. And that people want to put in their lots, that, that packers want to buy from that lot. And, to think about some of the more progressive cattle producers, I always go back to our folks in Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma, where these guys are doing a lot of retained ownership. And and that might be another, that's a different podcast for you maybe to go on, go into, but that's how you get that data back. That's how you know how your animals are performing. You gotta get, that data.
Yeah. And one challenge we had when I was an extension in Nebraska was that a lot of these feeders would send that data back to cow-calf producers.
No.
But they didn't know how to use it.
Right.
Yeah. And so you would get so much data and inability actually to go through there and make good decisions going forward.
Yeah.
And you know, you may know we have some challenges on, you know, whatever, but they wouldn't know how to use that data to make those.
How do we adjust our cow? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and that's the learning process, and that's where getting out back to our original conversation to circle this thing back around. Go to for those out there that are listening, go and meet your extension folks, your beef extension specialists in your state, in your area, because they can help you digest that data. Meet with some of the more progressive farmers out there, and just by the way, they might be younger than you. But it's okay to go and ask them, what does this mean? And how can I use this in my herd? Right. And don't be afraid to go ask. You know, don't be afraid to ask questions of your neighbor, of the others in your area.
Let's move over to quality. And you know, in the early 90s, in the 80s, we had quality issues.
Yeah.
Even in the late 90s, we had quality issues.
Yes, we did.
And we've seen a big jump in choice or greater in the last maybe 10 years of we're averaging in the high 80%, 85 plus, right? And so we've seen a massive increase in quality from that standpoint. And I think if you compare us to beef to other meat products, what is the advantage a beef producer in marketing has on pork or on poultry side?
First, I want to just make a real big point about how quality has changed. In 1991, almost half of the fed beef in this country were graded select.
Yeah.
That number is closer to maybe 15%. Yeah. So we have had a dramatic change. We're close to 10% prime in this country regularly. Mm-hmm. We should be all jumping up and down about that. That is what a change. Holy cows. Okay. The difference that beef brings is that we continue to focus on that quality. And I'll confess to everybody listening, I'm a beef guy. I love cattle, but I also go and try to explain to the other species that, guys, look at what beef has done.
Right.
It's more expensive. It takes longer to grow. It takes more resources. Yet, look at the price that is being achieved per pound compared to pork and chicken. That hasn't changed. It really hasn't changed. And in fact, if you bring into consideration inflation, pork has probably lost value.
Right.
beef has focused on quality, and really it keeps coming back down to marbling and focusing on better animal genetics that lead to a better tenderness, overall eating experience. We have great animal handling understanding now, which has really helped a lot on our palatability side too. And that was a big change that needed to happen in the 90s. Yep. And now now it's just a normal thing that we do. We don't whip and holler. We don't use hot shots hardly ever anymore. I mean, it's a more calmer animal that we're managing. But beef at the consumer level, at the grocery store, people recognize the quality. And even though the price keeps going up, they want that eating experience that is so unique that you can't get from pork and chicken. You just can't get it.
And that's a big selling point is look at the holiday season and what is being marketed at a high rate. And it's not necessarily the other products. It's actually beef.
Yeah. It's absolutely beef. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, you know, in to circle back around to some of my research that I've done and areas that I've hung out in the past with different fabrication methods, cutting methods is, ribeyes and tenderloins, especially in the holidays, just go sky high through the roof. But if you still want beef, there are other options out there that are a lower cost, but now you still have beef on the menu. So again, that strip loin, it's the same muscle as the ribeye, guys. Buy that because its cost is going to be drastically lower than a prime rib at the holidays, yet you still make a great roast out of it. You know, sirloins are another great example too. So, there's something on that beef carcass for everyone. And I think that's another advantage of beef.
It's time for our famous three.
A high-functioning rumen drives herd performance, gut health, and profitability. Levucel SC by Lelemon Animal Nutrition is the only naturally occurring rumen-specific active dry yeast probiotic designed to optimize rumen function, boost fiber digestion, and help you get more out of your native rangeland or pasture. No matter how you supplement your herd, include Levucel SC to help your cows grow bigger calves. Discover the right formulation for your herd at ChooseLevucelSC.com.
Well, to wrap us up, we've got three questions for you.
Yes, sir.
And so the first one is, what is your go-to beef-related resource, book, website, etc.?
So my go-to, I mean, if I need some answers quick, for say somebody who calls me up and I don't have either the time to write a dissertation in an email or I need to just give them a quick reference. It shouldn't be a surprise for most folks. I go to the Chekhov funded information that's out there. Beefiswhatsfordinner.com is the National Cattlemen's Beef Association website, and it has a tremendous amount of information from beef cuts to recipes to nutritional facts. This is a huge question right now out there, especially with folks who are doing direct to marketing things. Go check out all of the nutritional facts resources that you can use to your advantage to help market your products. And it's free. It's all available and it's free to whoever wants to go access it. It has already been paid for by the Chekhov that you paid for, you producers out there. And so that's my main go-to for quick information.
No, that's a great resource.
Yes, sir.
So what is a non-ag book that you would recommend people to read?
Okay. I'm gonna take some time for selfishness right now, and I hope that's okay. All right. So I have been advocating and preaching about livestock and animal agriculture for a long time. It is my mission in life to teach the world that. And so it's a non-ag book, but it is a book that I recently wrote. It's called It's Not a Cow. If you haven't grabbed this thing, it's not very long. It's not a pop-up book, but it's not very long. It's quick read. it's kind of like how it's as if I'm talking to you is what a lot of people say. There's a little bit of humor in there, but it's written for those who are not in our industry. And So for those who are listening, I'm assuming the overwhelming majority are beef producers.
Right.
This book is for all of your customers. And in the end, I want everybody to grab a copy of it. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Barnes and Noble. We've actually been a bestseller on some of those lists for a little bit of time. But the point of it is, if you get to the very end of that book, it has a job for you to do. Mostly it's been beef folks that have been buying this thing, but the job is to pass it on to somebody who's not in our industry.
Yeah.
Great. And to invite people to our world, because we need to keep educating about that. If we don't, we're going to be at a loss. So
yep.
How's that for shameless pluggery?
Glad to have the promo for you. And
good. Excellent. Thank you.
So I actually knew about the book, and I did not think about it when I asked that question.
I'll take advantage anyway.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
All right. So last question is what sets apart a successful beef professional?
Continual education and diversity. You know, nature likes diversity. If you are in the seed stock genetic side of things, you know that when we can bring in a different group of animals into our herd, all of a sudden hybrid vigor starts to really show up. Cow calf guys know this. That's why cow calf operations are you know, it's a rainbow of colors out there sometimes. Genetics are showing us that to diversify with our business makes sense. And so that's the genetics example, but be willing to try different things, and be willing to try branching out maybe beyond your breed, or just going out and learning about different grazing techniques, different feeding ideas, different feed options. Cattle are miraculous creatures that can eat a variety of different co-products, byproducts that we can't, but they can turn it into high quality, nutritious food later on. For us to consume, or if you're more on the seed stock purebred side of things, it's going to turn those animals into your product. It's going to turn it into the genetics that are going to be passed on. And so, continual education, diversify your business, and just keep growing, keep pushing forward. And you know, sometimes our pride gets in the way, and we got to make sure that. That doesn't happen, because remain humble and go out and ask those questions, especially of the younger crowds that are out there that are asking questions, because they may have some insight into something new and cool that you didn't even know about.
Yep. Oh, that's great.
Cool.
Well, Phil, thanks for jumping on the podcast. It was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun to talk about meat science and a lot of good stuff here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.